Blast this one deep, deep, away back. Gone!
Backup catcher Cam Gallagher. As Jose Ramirez drives one to deep left field, Gordon back. He's out of room. It's out of here, and the Indians take the lead. Jose Ramirez with his 11th home run of the season. And finally, the Indians break the tie in the 14th inning.
Royals lose in 14 innings. If you stayed up late last night to watch it, you are a true Royals fan. Royals lose 5-4 in 14 innings. First pitch of the game by Mike Montgomery was served up into the seats by Francisco Lindor. Not a good start. Montgomery recovered 5 innings, allowed 5 hits and 1 run. He was on a pitch limit as he's making a transition from reliever back to starter and did a pretty decent job last night. Jorge Lopez was absolutely horrible. Out of the bullpen, couldn't throw a strike, so he was quickly pulled. And the Royals, Merrifield with a key error in the ball game, allowed the Indians to tie the ball game. But the Royals did hang around, made a game of it, and extended all the way to the 14th inning. But then Brian Flynn serves up the homer to Jose Ramirez, who you just heard. And that broke a 3-3 tie. They got an insurance run. The Royals add one in the 14th, but they lose 5-4. So the boys in blue will have to bounce back. And Josh Dunlop making his debut last night, and he scattered 3 hits over a couple innings. Ned Yost talks about the youngster's debut.
I mean, we got to the point where, we were trying to hope that we're going to score a run and not really conserve pitching at that point. And we got down to Josh and Flynn, and I knew Flynn was going to be long and go as long as he could go until we won it or lost it. But I thought he did fine. Came into tough situations and got out the bases loaded, jam the second inning. But I thought he did okay.
Well, thankfully, the game went to extra innings as Whit Merrifield, franchise record streak of going 126 games without going hitless in back-to-back games, seemed to be in jeopardy. But he got a 7th plate appearance in the 14th inning. And he singled sharply to right. And Whit says you never want to go hitless. Mixed in with a little luck tonight to get 7 plate appearances, so the streak continues. Despite the loss, the Royals are now 9-4 since the All-Star break. And by the way, Merrifield's streak is the 4th longest in the American League since 1946, if you believe in such a thing in regards to avoiding back-to-back hitless games. What's next? Oh, 3 games in a row. The statistics out there sometimes are just about useless. Yay, we can brag about that. But Whit did get a base hit last night in the 7th. For whatever it's worth. In regards to the trade front, Jake Diekman and Billy Hamilton seem to be the 2 best trade bait candidates for the Royals, and more than likely they'll be moved by the trade deadline, which is coming up here in just 5 days at the end of the month. Another guy that was mentioned by Cody Tapp, who covers the Royals on a regular basis for 610 Sports, that I hadn't thought of, but it was interesting he threw it out there, was Chesler Cuthbert. Maybe they could trade him. But, you know, he's a guy that actually has played pretty well, and he doesn't cost much money. So I don't know if there's any need to trade, but if you get some kind of prospect you really like, perhaps the Royals would move him too. So Royals are back in action against the Indians tonight. As the Royals will, let's see, who's on the hill? Is it Junis on the hill tonight?
Yes.
Okay, so Junis on the hill tonight for KC, and he was really good his last time out. And one of the reasons why the Royals have been really good since the All-Star break is their starting pitching has been really, 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 really good. Keller's been fantastic. Junis has been really good. The whole start where Duffy's been solid, 11 strikeouts, 6 1/3. Sparkman had a complete game shutout since the break. And then, of course, Montgomery last night, 5 innings, and allowed just the 1 run, and that was the leadoff homer to start the game on the first pitch. So you get good starting pitching, it's amazing how you can start winning games. And so people might get excited, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer, because it is great that they're pitching well, but this happens to about every team in major leagues. 162 games, you're going to have a stretch where you pitch well. It's just bound to happen. You're going to have a stretch where everybody pitches well. You're going to have a stretch where everybody kind of struggles. The problem is too little too late. I mean, this is what the Royals needed back in April and May so that they stay in contention.
Yeah.
Of course, now when they're completely out of it, now they start doing it, which is good and bad. Bad because it's too late. Good because, hey, you say, well, maybe we're all right in their starting rotation. You know, Junis maybe getting better, and Keller's figured it out, and Duffy, you know, has been pretty solid lately. And, you know, Sparkman maybe is part of the future in the rotation. And now we got Montgomery under contract a couple years. Now you can start dreaming, going, wow, okay, we got 5 guys going to start next year. Hey, let's let this thing play out.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have a bad stretch again, I guarantee
like,
you.
It's not a given just because they're having a good stretch right now at all.
No. Local.
Yeah. Yeah, very bad, long bad stretch to start the season. That's why they're where they're at right now.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Let's not get all crazy about it because we know what could happen.
No, I mean, is it encouraging? Yes, but will it carry over to next year? Probably not. Will it carry over the rest of this year? Probably not. Okay, local baseball. We got the Beloit Red. They're taking on Ellis. Dusty and I have already said who we're cheering for, and it's not Ellis. But anyway, I'll go through that schedule.
Yeah, K-18 starts tomorrow, the state tournament in Lucas. The Beloit Red, as he said, taking on Ellis. That's approximately 12:30 tomorrow afternoon. The first game is Clifton Clyde against Goodland at 10 a.m., so Beloit will play following that one, the Beloit Red team. And then after that, at 3 o'clock, Concordia F&A faces Waukini. And then approximately 5:30, it's Norton against Republic County. So those are the games, first round games, quarterfinals tomorrow in Lucas. The semifinals will take place on Sunday. And if you want the full bracket, it's posted at ncksports.com. If you're wondering all the times for the entire tournament, then everything finishes up with the finals on Wednesday next week. So that's the K-18 State Baseball Tournament in Lucas.
All right. Chiefs continuing training camp. Kalen Saunders is an intriguing rookie, and especially if Chris Jones is going to hold out. And the Chiefs continuing training camp, the veterans are supposed to report today. It doesn't sound like Chris Jones will be one of those guys, so we'll continue to monitor that situation. Chiefs have a lot of new faces on defense, including rookie Kalen Saunders. And he talked about the fact that, yeah, Chris Jones, he's not here, but he's still been able to talk to him, and he said he's been helpful.
Me and Chris talk a little bit over social media and text, and you know, he helps me a lot even when he's not here. You know, he's helped me with my nutrition and diet, because you know he himself is losing a little bit of weight as well. So he told me how to do that and how to be a professional about it. And so, you know, he's a help even when he's not here right now.
Well, you like to see guys that are going to help out other teammates, and that's one thing that made, I think, Patrick Mahomes as good as he was last year is Alex Smith. If he would have been a guy that didn't try to help Alex or Patrick Mahomes, I don't think Mahomes would have been quite as good as he was last year. And Smith was a team player, and he knew that he was on his way out and still was helping Mahomes, and I think that's what a leader does. And Chris Jones sounds like he's doing the same thing. Kalen Saunders talks about playing against Mr. Mahomes in practice.
I mean, we know what Patrick is. You know, we know who he is. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So, you know, getting to go against that every day, I mean, that like sets a standard. And so, like, you know, when you get to obviously the quarterbacks in the NFL, they're in the NFL for a reason. So I'm not taking away from anything they're doing. But, you know, when you go against Pat, it's a little different. So he can do almost anything that a quarterback position is allowed to do. And, yeah, when you see that every day, it kind of prepares you for almost anything you can see.
Saunders talks about playing in the defensive scheme that the Chiefs have now under their new defensive coordinator.
Well, I actually played 3-4 and a 4-3 in college, so I'm used to any kind of defense. You know, I pick them up really fairly easily, and you know, it's been really easy, especially with the coaching staff out here. They, you know, they specifically explain exactly what they want you to do, so that's been very helpful.
Kalen Saunders, 22 years old, and he's 6'3", 324 pounds, a third-round draft pick from the Chiefs this past draft, and it will be interesting to see if he can be a guy that rotates in there defensively on the line. I don't think he's a guy that's going to be a starter. Derek Nnadi came around and I think improved last year. And where they, you know, Chris Jones was on the interior last year, it sounds like they might move him around to some D end at times. You know, how are you going to use Frank Clark? Is he going to be lined up as a D end at times? Is he going to be lined up as a normal linebacker? And then Tyrann Mathieu can line up in the box as a linebacker. We've seen Sorensen do it. The Chiefs got so many guys that are pretty versatile that can move around defensively, and that's why I'm excited to see what the Chiefs can do. And I think it's going to make it tougher on opposing teams to figure out what they're doing. And, yes, I'll say it once again, it was 1 year too late. But it is here, and Saunders, you hear about these rookies so many times. They look good early on, and then, you know, the season progresses, and they're on the practice squad or they're not active and they don't help. But there are guys from time to time that can really make a difference or can just be a really nice role player. And perhaps Kalen Saunders can be one of those guys that if the Chiefs can not be on the field so long, allowing these long, long, methodical drives, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 3, can't stop them, you're going to need guys to rotate in and stay fresh. And now if you don't have to be on the field as long, that would be good for everybody involved. If you still feel comfortable rotating defensive linemen such as Kalen Saunders, that could be a valuable part of the team.
Oh, yeah, without question. You got to have those kind of guys that are going to do that for you. And there's been a lot of good talk about what he did in the OTAs and things like that, and maybe he can be that guy that can spell the other guys. Because I think you're right. You don't really want him to be going out there right away to start the season. So, but, yeah, you need those kind of guys that can fill in. Injuries or anything would pop up that you don't want to have, but yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what he might be able to do. And some of those other guys that we've talked about here, you know, Thornhill's of the world and all those other guys that could make an impact as youngsters that can help this team.
Now, Travis Kelce, I know you talked about it yesterday a little bit, but Travis Kelce says he's 100% ready to go after ankle surgery in the offseason. He needs to be. There is a lack of depth at tight end. We have already discussed that in previous shows. Danny Welniak was on earlier this week. She certainly noticed the lack of depth at the tight end position. She seems pretty excited. And by the way, if you don't know who Danny Welniak is, she's the sideline reporter for the Chiefs Radio Network, sports director at KCTV Live in Kansas City, and she was with us earlier this week. If you missed that, it's on our podcast center there with the sports ticket on our website, kdcountry94.com. And she is pretty excited. There's this intensity. There's this aggressiveness. There's this really hunger defensively to be better. And I think that only happens when you change defensive coaching staffs. And that's something that the Chiefs didn't do and waited way too long, as we know. But now that they have done that, there's a lot of new faces. You got different leaders on this team, no longer Justin Houston, Eric Berry on the squad. Dee Ford's not here anymore. And so the Chiefs now have really a completely revamped and new-look defense. And I'm just really excited to see what they're going to be able to do. I'm not expecting a top-10 defense. If it's a top-10 defense, this team's winning the Super Bowl, I would think. But if this is a top 15 or 20 defense, that would be plenty good for me.
Oh, without question. I think we've talked about that many times, that that's all they had to be last year. I mean, you could just be average at best last year. They would have been in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of positives that you look at with what you're bringing in here. And the coach has a history of doing some good things. And so you try to make the improvements you need to do. And I completely agree. I mean, yeah, they're top 10. The offense would have to have a really bad digression.
Knowing the Chiefs' luck, the defense will be really good. Top 10, Mahomes gets hurt week 4, and the Chiefs go 10 and 6 and lose in the wild card. I mean, that's, we got the defense all figured out. Because that's the problem with the Chiefs all these years. When you go back to 1995 and 1997, when the Chiefs are 13-3 and had home field advantage in the playoffs, and, of course, 95, they lose because they have a horrible kicker. Their defense was fantastic. Their offense, well, it wasn't that great. Steve Bono was your quarterback. 1997, you start the wrong quarterback. That's on Marty and Carl Peterson there. And you go with Elvis Gerback after Gannon led you to that point in time. Defense was outstanding again that year. So your defense is awesome, 95, 97. Then 03, you start 9-0. Your offense is unbelievable. Your defense sucks. And so then, of course, we've seen what's happened the last couple of years. The offense has been really good, and the defense has been deplorable. So now we get the defense better. Now the offense will probably fall off. It just seems to be that's the case for the Chiefs.
Yeah,
like, could you ever put it together? Could you ever put it together? Like, could you be top 10 offense and top 10 defense? That is allowed.
But somehow it
just doesn't happen for the Chiefs. It's always ones near the bottom. And, you know, Marty's days, it was all about running the ball, play action, great defense. For me, it was, you know, run the ball, chuck it. We got a score to keep up. And then, of course, we don't even force a punt in a game against Peyton Manning and the Colts at home. Yeah. Now, the Chiefs got all kinds of great, great, great postseason history when it comes to failure. And a lot of it has to do with either the offense being inept, the kicker being inept, or the defense being inept. How about everything just as above average? Doesn't have to be great. And then you got a chance to win it all. Well, we do have the Chiefs. I say we because, you know, I play for the team. We, the Chiefs kingdom, we have the best quarterback in the National Football League. And if somebody wants to sit here and go, well, Tom Brady's better, we're talking right now. Who won the MVP last year? It wasn't Tom Brady. The Chiefs have the best quarterback in the NFL right now, okay? Now, Tom Brady's still a great quarterback. The Patriots maybe have the better odds to win the Super Bowl or make it out of the AFC. That's possible, certainly. But there's no question that the best young quarterback or the best quarterback in the National Football League, especially when you consider the youth and the fact that this is his second year as a starter, the Chiefs have that guy. And for once in their lives, they have that guy. Instead of Dave Craig, Joe Montana at the end of his career, Steve Bono, Steve DeBerg, Trent Green, who was a good quarterback, Damon Heward. I mean, we could go on. Alex Smith, who was a nice game manager. Chiefs should never get – Todd Blackledge was a bust. Well, we don't want to draft a first-round quarterback ever again. And then finally, to trade it up, got Patrick Mahomes. For once – It's refreshing, of course, for Chiefs fans, certainly, to have the guy, the cat's meow, and everybody else is just looking around going, God, we wish we had that guy on our team. I mean, if you ask every general manager in the National Football League right now, if you could pick one player, any player in the National Football League to build around right now, I don't think there'd be many people that would say somebody other than Patrick Mahomes. No. They would all say Patrick Mahomes. They wouldn't say Cam Newton, wouldn't say Russell Wilson. Don't think they'd say Sam Darnold, Deshaun Watson, or even Baker Mayfield. I think it'd be almost unanimous, Patrick Mahomes.
If it's not, they're just haters. Like,
yes,
they just,
exactly. And I don't. GMs
are
not,
raiders.
GMs,
you know, like.
GMs are not really haters.
No.
Fans are haters. Media's haters.
Yeah.
GMs are typically not haters. There's a lot of jealousy because the Chiefs had that guy.
Yeah.
The face of the National Football League. And how big is Patrick Mahomes? The new Madden 20 game has come out, and there are some people that are apparently have got an early look at this. And Mahomes apparently can throw 90-yard touchdown passes in Madden 20.
Yeah.
No look passes, 83-yard pass rolling to his left against his body. I've seen the videos here that have been posted. CBS Sports has a story. It says Madden 20 won't be officially be released for a few weeks, but early looks at gameplay indicate Patrick Mahomes could be a real problem. First guy since probably Michael Vick on the game to just be crazy good. He has a rating of 97, which, by the way, there's guys that have a better rating. Aaron Donald, 99. Mahomes has a 97 rating. But he apparently can just, it looks like he's a cheat code. It just, the arm strength is absurd on Madden 2020. So
that's what I was going to say. Did they put a cheat code in to throw it 83 yards on there?
I don't know. It's just amazing what he can do on a video game. It's amazing what he can do on a football field in real life.
Oh, yeah.
Reminds me of the old Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl days where, you know, he could just go zigzag up and down, go 99 yards all the time. Might not be that easy for Mahomes in the video game world, but it does sound like if you have Mahomes on your football team, in real life and also in Madden, you're going to do okay.
Yeah.
And he's on the cover of Madden, too, by the way.
No, yeah, you probably want to have a good rating for the guy that's on the cover. So, he can – I'd probably be playing. You know, when I played those games, I used to not play with my team because they weren't all that good. But I think if I had played it now, I probably would play with the Chiefs just to play with Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them is just like, I didn't want to play with Matt Castle.
Right.
That's how long it's been, by the way, since I've played a Madden game, probably, when Matt Castle was the Chiefs quarterback.
Yeah, there's another one of those quarterbacks.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
You're like, great, we got a slightly above-average quarterback, but not somebody that's good enough to take us to the promised land. The Chiefs do have that guy now, and you just got to hope he stays healthy and nothing bad happens, you know, a shoulder injury, a knee injury or something. Knee injury you can bounce back from. The arm injuries are the ones that are tougher to come back from, to be actually honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Major League Baseball last night, pretty weird deal. The Baltimore Orioles and the Los Angeles Angels, they went 16 innings last night. Baltimore won 10-8. So what's the big deal? Why would I bring this up? Stevie Wilkerson's an outfielder. He got the save. They were out of pitchers. So the center fielder came in to throw the 16th inning a little past midnight. He never threw harder than 56 miles per hour and got the save.
Yeah.
Because what happens? It happens in Pee Wee Baseball. It happens in K-18. It happens in Legion. It happens in Major League Baseball, obviously, and we see it here. Guys much rather hit the heat than the off-speed stuff.
Timing's way off.
The timing's way off. You're
like
not
that.
Used to seeing something that slow at 56 miles an hour. For one inning, you might be able to adjust the second time you at bat, but the first at bat, you're just, it's all about timing, and you're completely, completely off. And it worked last night as Wilkerson, 14 pitches, and got his first career save. I'm going to see the nugget here. He was the 10th pitcher. Got the save. I was going to see, when was the last time a position player got a save? I thought they were going to have it here.
Usually
the
they're in there when it's not going well, and they just need to get somebody in there to just finish it.
Right. I'm not seeing the information. I figured there'd be something in there to say that he's the first guy that's done it since 1943 or something crazy like that. I'm looking towards it, and I can't find it in the story. I'm scrolling down, and there's nothing about it. Well, that would have been nice to have had. But anyway, pretty crazy stuff there. It says first position player to record a save, so maybe he's the first one to ever do it.
Yeah.
That's what it says as a title of the story, but it doesn't put it in the story. That's kind of something that would have been helpful. Troy Tulowitzki retiring. You know, he was really good at the Rockies. Was good. And then the Blue Jays, he was good for a while. Then he kind of bounced around. But, you know, there's interest. I'd have to look at his numbers. Would he be a Hall of Fame candidate?
No.
I think he wouldn't be good enough, wouldn't he?
No, he's got 1,300 hits. And
oh, that's not probably enough.
I had it in my sports cast. I can't remember what they all were. I'll close that now. But, yeah, he's 1,300-some hits and, like, 240 home runs or something like that.
Huh.
Batting average would have been good enough, but the rest, he doesn't have enough on the other numbers.
Okay. Well, if he stayed in Colorado his whole career, probably would have.
Yeah.
Yankees in the standings have a 9.5-game lead over Tampa Bay. Boston 10 games back. And then in the AL Central, Cleveland now only 2 games back of the Twins. Cleveland's in red hot. The Twins have a plus 115 run differential, yet they only lead the division by 2 games now. The Royals are now 6 games out of last. Rock on! Royals yes. are in fourth, and they are on a solid fourth place path. American League West, the A's are now 8 games back of the Astros. The Angels still in the wild card hunt. They're 12 games back at 54-50. In the National League, the Braves up 4.5 after Royals swept them in a short 2-game series. Phillies are 5.5 back. So that one's still in doubt. And then the NL Central is just crazy. You got the Cubs and the Cardinals tied. The Brewers are 2 games back in that division. And then the NL West, it's all Dodgers, 14.5-game lead over Arizona. San Francisco's gotten hot lately. They're now 52-51. And when you look at the wild card standings right now, because that allows a lot of teams to stay in it, right now when you look at the wild card, Cleveland and Oakland would be your wild card teams. The Rays would be a 0.5-game back, Boston 1 back, and the Angels 4 back. So all those teams have a chance. In the National League, the Phillies are a game out of the wild card. The Brewers are 2 back. And then the D-backs and the Giants, who had talked about getting rid of Mad Bum, the guy that ruined the Royals' 2014 season in that World Series. Not bitter at all. Bumgarner, they were talking about how he would be traded maybe to the Yankees. All of a sudden, the Giants are starting to win. And now the Giants think that they might be able to get in the playoffs. And, hey, all you got to do is make the dance. We've seen teams that getting a wild, be a wild card team, make it all the way to the World Series or win it all. We saw it in 14 with the Royals, won the, I call it the kind of the play-in game, the wild card game against the A's, and then all the way to Game 7 of the World Series and had home field because they won the American League won the All-Star game that year. So if you can get in, you never know. So why would the Giants trade Madison Bumgarner now when they're suddenly in contention? Yeah, so that dries up a potential big name that could be traded at the trade deadline.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's why you kind of, it's probably why a lot of teams wait until that 31st of July, yes, that deadline, to see, hey, am I going to make some kind of run here? Because I don't want to do this too early. I don't want to be like, okay, this isn't going well, so I just give up right away. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but the Yankees would probably like to have them as they go in. But, yeah, I think that's a good idea to just kind of wait if you're, you know, hovering around a possible wild card. But then in the end, what happens if they lose all these games and then they could have gotten something for them and it doesn't work out in that aspect? So there's always tough decisions to make, but yeah, I feel pretty good. If you have a chance to make it, you want to have him on your team. There's no doubt.
Mike Minor, former Royal, just there for a short while. He is one of the top sought after pitchers on the market in regards to trades. Mm-hmm. He was an All-Star this year, ERA under 3 with the Rangers, and there was talk the Yankees might try to go after him. Of course, the Yankees will be mentioned in every single possible trade acquisition mentioned.
Yes.
And probably the Red Sox, I don't know what they're going to do. It doesn't sound like they're going to make many deals because they should be better than they are, and they're starting to come on. Okay, going back to the NFL, the Chiefs preseason opener, by the way, will be Saturday, August 10th. So we're only a few weeks away from that against the Bengals, and then they'll be at the Steelers, and then the San Francisco 49ers will be a home game, and then at the Packers in Lambeau. That's the preseason games, and then their season will start on Sunday, September 8th, on the road at Jacksonville, which seems like a winnable game, certainly, but Jacksonville does have Nick Foles as their quarterback, so look out. And then they got to go to Oakland and Baltimore at home. That's three games where you sit here and go, well, at Jacksonville, at Oakland, that should be wins. Baltimore at home, the Chiefs will be 3-0. Then they go to Detroit, they're not very good, 4-0. Then the Colts are at home, 5. Well, that's 5-0. And then Texans are home, well, we're not going to lose at home, that's 6-0. Well, Denver's not that great, so they're going to be winning at Denver, 7-0. Well, Green Bay's at home, so that's a win. That's 8-0. Minnesota's at home, that's a win. 9-0. At Tennessee, well, their quarterback play is not great. 10-0. At the Chargers, well, you know, we might lose that one. 10-1. And then Oakland, well, that's a win, obviously. 11-1. At New England, well, you know, Mahomes can win anywhere. I think they just might pull that one out. 12-1. Denver at home, of course, we win. 13-1. At the Bears, they got Trubisky as a quarterback. 14-1. Chargers at home, we ain't going to lose at home. 15-1. There you go. Chiefs are going to be 15-1. 15-1, their only loss at the L.A. Chargers this year. I joke about it because you go one by one, and you can make a good case with every game the Chiefs are going to win.
Well, yeah.
Obviously, because you have Patrick Mahomes, you can win anywhere. You can win in Pittsburgh. You can win in New England. You would have won in Foxborough last year if you had any kind of defense. Any kind of defense, you would have won last year in Foxborough. You would have won in L.A. against the Rams if you had any kind of defense in that game. You would have won in Seattle had you had any defense in that game. The Chiefs can win anywhere. I don't care if they go to Siberia. They can win anywhere. And I think they're going to have to play poorly to lose to some teams that are on their schedule. So I've heard this. Well, the Chiefs' early part of their schedule is really tough. Is it? At Jacksonville. Okay, well, they were really good 2 years ago. Last year, they fell off the map.
Yeah.
Is Nick Foles the answer? I mean, they're going to be a physical team. I still think Mahomes and the Chiefs have enough. I think they're going to win that game. At Oakland, you know, it's a rivalry game, but I'm just not buying Oakland. I know the guy Antonio Brown, Derek Carr should have a bounce-back year, maybe. I'm not buying the Raiders, man. And then the Ravens, that's going to be the toughest of the first three games is the home game.
Yeah.
And the Ravens, you know, I think they could slow down Mahomes. They did last year. Of course, that was that no-look pass game, and then he pulled the Chiefs were very fortunate to win that game at Arrowhead last year, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Probably should have lost it, but Mahomes basically saved the day in that game with that fourth down pass. So the Ravens, that's a game where you can easily win. The Lions don't look like they're all that, like normal. The Colts will be good. The Texans are good, but you have those games at home. So I keep hearing the Chiefs' schedule is tough. Early part of the year is tough because they've got three of the first four games are on the road. Yeah, but they're at Jacksonville, at Oakland, and at Detroit, and all those teams were losers last year. Now, I know they could be much better.
Yeah, yeah.
They could. These three teams could suddenly be 10-6 teams this year. But I don't see how super difficult this is. I mean,
it doesn't scare you.
No. Like, why should it scare you? Oh my God, we played 4 weeks and we only have one home game. So yeah. What? I mean, it's not like you're going to Pittsburgh. Like, you're not starting a season at New England, which there's talk of that. You're not going to Pittsburgh. You know, I mean, Jacksonville. That's who you're playing.
If you had at New England and at Chicago and at Pittsburgh or something like that,
right.
Then, yeah, I think you'd probably think a little bit more that it'd be not scared, but you're like, oh, those are going to be tougher games, but not those.
Jacksonville was 5-11 last year, Oakland 4-12, the Lions 6-10. That's three of the first four games of the year for the Chiefs. They just happen to be on the road. Well, if I want to have road games, get them out of the way early, I want it against bad teams. Those are not good teams.
Yeah.
I think still people think Jacksonville's great because they were good 2 years ago. So why are we sitting here talking about how tough this schedule is? Because I've been hearing, well, the schedule's tough early on. Just because you go on the road three times out of four? And you got Baltimore coming into your house. That'll be your best test out of the four. So, I mean, you look at the schedule for the Chiefs, those are... You should start 4-0. And then the Colts at home, you know, the Colts will be fired up. Justin Houston returned to KC. That'll be bittersweet. You know, I still think the Chiefs will beat the Colts too. And then the Texans at home, you know, the Texans, that game could go either way. Who knows? Injuries for either team, this and that. But, you know, I sit here and I look at the Chiefs' schedule, and I'm sitting here going 6-0. 6-0 going into the Denver game, which that's a Thursday night game. And I will say, you know, the Chiefs last year, if the Broncos would have kept running the ball, would have beat the Chiefs in Denver last year. The Denver Broncos have a defense
they
that
were
does
there both times,
right.
You know?
Yeah, the game at Arrowhead was a game for a while. They have been able to slow down Patrick Mahomes to an extent. They're probably one of the best defenses in regards to containing Patrick Mahomes. So that game is going to be very tough at Denver in Week 7. I don't care who Denver's quarterback is. That's still going to be tough because the Broncos' defense is still going to be really good, I think. 6-0 starting a year with wins over the Ravens, the Colts, and Texans, but those are all at Arrowhead. And I know winning at Arrowhead isn't a guarantee. I get that because we saw last year, you know, losing to the Chargers at home when it looked like they were going to have that one. I know they've lost at home before, but if this defense is better, even if it's just marginally better, I mean, like, how do we define marginally better? They were the second to last defense last year, 31st. So if they're like the 24th best defense.
Yeah.
Okay, then I think the Chiefs are 6-0, but we're also assuming Kelce stays healthy. Hill doesn't get suspended. He stays healthy. We're assuming the running game, that'll step up without Kareem Hunt for half a season. We assume Mahomes going to improve and stay healthy. If we assume all those things, which is a lot of ifs, ands, and buts, this team, really in essence, should start 6-0. Is that unrealistic?
Yeah, no, it's not unrealistic.
Because I've heard some people say the Chiefs, there's no way.
I guarantee it's going to happen, but it's definitely not unrealistic.
Well, I've been hearing people tell me that, well, come on, we got to be realistic. The Chiefs aren't going 12-4 again this year. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Last year's defense was horrendous, and they went 12-4. So why can't this team go, well, the schedule's harder? Well, is it really harder? The first three road games are against putzes. Now watch the Chiefs lose at Jacksonville start the year, and I'm going to eat those words. But I just, unless the Chiefs have some injuries to some really key positions, obviously Mahomes is front and center. But if they stay healthy, and even if they have Sammy Watkins miss a game or two, or even a Kelsey a game or two, or a Hill a game or two, as long as they're not all at the same time, I think they'll still be okay, especially if that defense is better. So I don't see the schedule being, like, super difficult. Yeah, it's tough. Every schedule's tough. There's some tough games. There's some you think are easy games. And every year you look at the schedule and you go, oh, those teams are really bad, like I have. And you just assume they're going to be bad again. And all of a sudden they could be really good. And all these teams you think were great last year, they go backwards.
Yeah.
The next year. It happens all the time. So, you know, the Bears had a really good year last year. Are the Bears going to go backwards? Possibly. The Rams had an unbelievable year, made it to the Super Bowl. Are they going to regress? Possibly. I mean, so you've got these teams, and you look at the standings, you know, from last year, and you got to sit and go, well, what teams really surprised last year that that could really fall off? You know, the Colts kind of jumped up, but that helps when you have Andrew Luck. But the Chargers, are the Chargers going to go 12-4 again this year? I'm going to say no. The Bears would be the greatest example, 12-4, and then they came back down to earth. The Saints went 13-3. Odds are they're not going 13-3 again this year. They'll probably regress a little bit. That's what people think of the Chiefs. You're 12-4. You're probably only going to win 10 or 11 this year. Well, I look at the schedule, and I see the defense is better. I think it's better already just by changing DCs and getting some different guys in and getting rid of some dead weight. I think this defense is already better more unpredictable. And then Mahomes is second year in the system as a starter, third year in the system overall. And now I'm sitting here and I'm going, why can't, of course this team can go 12-4. The thing is, 12-4 might not be good enough to get home field advantage. But once again, when you have Patrick Mahomes, do you really sit here and go, oh no, we got to go to Foxborough for the AFC title game, we can't win? Alex Smith won there. Now that was a regular season game, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs can win anywhere. I truly believe that. And even if this team goes 10-6 and has injuries and makes the wild card, I think this team can go deep in the playoffs. I think this team can win on the road. I don't think they have to have home field advantage to make it to the Super Bowl. And we saw when they had it last year, it didn't matter. Had the defense been addressed, it would have mattered. And you look at teams that are bad that end up being better. The Niners are 4-12. If they get healthy at quarterback, they should be better. The Cardinals are 3-13. Okay, Kyler Murray's maybe going to be their starter day one. Don't know. Number one draft pick. They're probably not going to be great. Tampa Bay, they're always a team that you sit here and go, they could improve. Carolina was 7-9. Atlanta 7-9. Those two would be my top candidates to turn things around this year. And how about the Packers? 6-9-1. A lot of people are going to think the Packers can win 10 or 11 this year. Then there's the Giants at 5-11. Will they get better? I don't know about that. Some people think that the Raiders are going to improve and get to 8-8, 9-7. I don't know if I'm seeing that. Jacksonville would be a team. No, they got a decent quarterback now, Nick Foles. So 5-11, now they're going to be 9-7, 10-6. And we might find out at the end of the year that Jacksonville, that was a great win for the Chiefs in week one, or it was a tough loss against a really good team early on. We'll find out. But the point of the story is there are teams that really improve from year to year. So when you look at the schedule and you go, schedule strength, well, this team has a horrible, tough schedule. At the end of the year, when you re-rank it, it's not as tough as you think. And when you think it's an easy schedule, it's a lot harder than you
yeah,
think.
Yeah, yeah. It looks that way on purpose because the NFL does that.
Absolutely.
And you play the teams that were, you know, there's going to be some carryovers that are going to be just as good as they were the year before. So then those teams that you're facing that you thought were good the year before are playing the teams that stayed good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're going to beat them. Like, this doesn't, you know, the Chiefs, if they stay where they're at, are still better than most of these teams that they're playing. They just are.
Yes.
And so it shouldn't matter. If you think you're a Super Bowl contender, if you think you're one of the top three or four teams in the NFL, who's on your schedule, that means absolutely nothing. If you're that good of a team. Look, when the Patriots get their schedule, they probably don't even care about who they're playing. Who are we playing this week? That's all they care about. If you're that good, don't even worry about who you're playing, because things are going to – Chicago might be – I don't remember what week you said they were, but they might be – you know, four games under 500 already by the time they play the Chiefs. They might not have as good of a year as you think. And so, yeah, it's just not – you can't just look at it and say, well, yeah, on the surface it looks like it's a more difficult schedule because you're the best team. You're playing all three of the teams in the AFC that won their division last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it goes. But they do that on purpose so the teams that are below there can have a better chance to recover and not have to play like the fourth team in each league division doesn't have to play the Chiefs.
Right.
They do that on purpose, so some of those teams can maybe get better. These teams are going to get beat by those other teams that stayed good, and they didn't make the necessary changes to stay on top where they were.
By the way, there's only two games that are different, that are a big difference.
Yeah.
Maybe, honestly, because we talk about how teams can get better and get worse that quickly from year to year, because you're playing everywhere in division, and then you're playing the same division within your division in the cross in the other conference. So it really, the schedule isn't a lot different.
Yeah. It's
two games. That's it.
However you finish in your division, you play the other two divisions that finished in that spot.
That's it.
Because you're playing, like you said, you're playing everybody from, you know.
And so I hear this, well, go, they got to play a first-place schedule. It's not that big of a deal. It really isn't.
No, it's not.
It really isn't. Now, let's ask this. So we believe, I think we're all in agreement here, that the Patriots and the Chiefs are probably the two best teams in the AFC. Chargers probably in the discussion. After that, anybody else?
I don't feel it. But
I don't feel it either.
You know.
Okay, in the NFC right now, who do we think are the best teams? I mean, the Saints and the Rams got to be the top two.
Yeah, those are the two that I was going to say would be the top.
And then do we put Bears, Cowboys after that?
Yeah, like because I don't.
Ezekiel Elliott might be holding out. Is that the deal now? That's more drama for Dallas, of course.
Yeah, it's hard for me to put Dallas up there just because. You feel like they might implode at some point.
Right. Okay, so let's go.
But Chicago probably would be the third I would put.
Let's look at this in a whole different light, just for fun. Who will be the worst team in the National Football League this year?
Oh, well.
CBS Sports, they have an article about this. That's why I bring it up. They say the Redskins could be the worst team in the National Football League, and they give reasons why. First of all, Case Keenum's their quarterback. Not because, I mean, he's not a horrible quarterback. Average, I'd say. Dwayne Haskins, the rookie. They just released their leading tackler. After they had some issues with him, boom, released before even training camp began, which was bad timing for that kid guy because he could have been somewhere else learning a system. Trent Williams, their really good offensive lineman, is holding out, and it's getting nasty, that holdout. Alex Smith, of course, with that gruesome injury last year, he's not going to play this year, and I don't think he'll play ever again for the Redskins. He'll probably, if he's going to come back, he's probably going to be with another team.
Yeah.
More than likely. So, you know, the Redskins don't look like they're going to be that good. The Jets, Sam Darnold, they were 4-12 last year. I would think they'd be improved. The Bengals, 6-10. Jacksonville, 5-11. I'm giving you the last place teams here.
Yeah.
Raiders were 4-12. Giants were 5-11. Lions were 6-10. Buccaneers, 5-11. Cardinals, 3-13. I'll throw in the 49ers. They were 4-12. Have all those teams, and there could be somebody that was 7-9, 8-8 that ends up being the worst team in the league this year, which could be the Redskins. They were 7-9, so we'll throw them in there. But just right off the top of your head, who do you think is going to be the worst team in the National Football League? Who's going to have the number one pick in the draft next year?
All that stuff you were saying about the Redskins, they make a pretty good case for it. But
who's the number one pick going to be? Who's going to have it next year?
If they go with the Cardinals, go with Kyler Murray right away, they could struggle. It could be a long season for them, but they've got to know
new head coach.
You know what you're doing moving forward that might help that. And the 49ers, I mean, they went in a tailspin last year when Garoppolo got hurt, so I think they'll be better. They got a lot of young guys there too. Man, it's tough.
You know who I'm going to pick?
I want to cop out and just say the Redskins because that guy picked the Redskins. But
but here's who I'm going to pick as the worst team in the National Football League. The New York Giants.
Yeah.
What have they done to improve their team?
Yeah, nothing.
They drafted Daniel Jones, which was a huge reach. Eli Manning is not nearly as good as he once was. I mean, Barkley's really, he's a stud. They had him last year, went 5-11, and he had a really good year. I just don't see anything that makes me excited about the Giants. Now watch, they'll make it to the Super Bowl. But they've been last place the last couple of years. I think there's going to be, at some point, they're going to hand the reins to the young rookie, and they're going to have to lose a lot of games. The Daniel Jones kid out of Duke. So they're sitting there talking about Redskins. I'm in the same division. So if the Redskins would be really bad, and the Giants, I think, are going to be really bad, the Cowboys have a cakewalk, don't they? They're them and the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't know what the Eagles will do this year, but...
That doesn't look like that strong a division. In some years, we'd be like, oh, that's the toughest division. What do you think's the toughest division in the National Football League?
NFC North is good, outside of the Lions, obviously. That could be a tight one, I think.
Last year, 12-4, 8-7, 6-9, 6-10 doesn't look that good.
Yeah, but it's like if the Packers are healthy and Rodgers is there, that's going to make that.
Lions are usually better than their 6-10.
Yeah,
they're a competitive 6-10. I'm gonna stick with the division the Chiefs are in. I think the toughest division in NFL. I think the NFC South's pretty doggone tough. You got Jacksonville, who should be improved. Tennessee's solid. Indianapolis and Houston. That's a pretty good division. I still think the AFC East is weak, like it almost always is for the Patriots. It's them and everybody else.
Yeah,
I'd say them. I'd say the East in both conferences might be the weakest. That's just my opinion. But, well, you certainly could throw in the NFC West when the Niners and Cardinals. But Seahawks are good. The Rams are really good. So I don't know about that. But to me, I sit here and go, two of the top three teams AFC are in the same division. Denver, I think, will be better than 6-10. I don't think Joe Flacco's great, but I do think Denver, they've got – who's their head coach? The guy from Chicago.
Oh, right? I went blank.
Yeah. I think they're going to be better. I think coaching-wise, they're going to make better decisions. I think the Broncos are a team that could easily be 8-8, and that probably be where they are. Well, that's an improvement, 6-10. And I think the Raiders will be better, too. I mean, you know, 4-12, they got to be better, right? Derek Carr has to be better. Gruden's second year in the system, he weeded out the guys he didn't want. You know, I talk about Scott Frost in Nebraska weeding out these guys and creating the culture. That's what John Gruden's done at Oakland. Now, I have a lot more faith in Frost and what's going to happen at Nebraska than what the Raiders are going to do. But the Raiders, I think, will be better. So, you know, I sit here and I say there's three teams going to be 500 or better, and a fourth team that maybe the Raiders can make a jump and be 500. And the Chargers certainly were a team that they were hot at the end of last year. I still don't know what the Chargers are going to do when Phillip Rivers retires. They have no plan. No. I don't even know if the Patriots have. I mean, sure, the Patriots have a plan, but you know, if Brady goes down, who's their backup quarterback? I can't tell you right now. It's probably a guy that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I thought about this the other day. Just wait till Brady retires and the Patriots are just going to stink. I'm like, the guy that's their backup probably going to end up being the next Tom Brady, and the Patriots just keep winning.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that just irritate everybody the heck?
Yeah.
I can't even tell you who their quarterback is.
There's a joke. Vic Fangio, by the way, is the Broncos coach. I thought of it I was about ready to search it. There's a deal last year when Bill Snyder had his meeting with the team, and the punter for the K-State came out, Devin Antill, and said Tom Brady's a system quarterback. I mean, obviously he's joking, but there's a little bit of truth.
Brian Hoyer's still the backup in New England for crying out loud. My God.
But, I mean, when he says that Tom Brady's a system quarterback, if you look back at his career, there's a little bit of truth in that.
Yes, there is.
It's how he started.
Sure.
But, obviously, he developed into maybe the best quarterback that's ever played in the game.
Right.
But he did that under the tutelage of the Patriots coaches and under Bill Belichick and his team. Mm-hmm. And who's to say that the next guy up can't do that? Who's to say they could draft a guy in the third, fourth, fifth round here coming up in the next draft? And you know, 2 years later, he's ready to go and becomes everything. Maybe not as good as Tom Brady, but everything the Patriots need him to be to stay right where they're at.
Right.
I mean, nobody can say that can't happen. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that. Nobody expected the sixth round Tom Brady to be what some people consider the best quarterback of all time.
Right.
I mean, can you catch lightning in a bottle twice? I don't know, but obviously if you have the right system and you understand how to coach and you understand what you need to do to win games, that's going to go a long way.
Right.
Than just having the guy. They don't need Patrick Mahomes as much as the Chiefs need Patrick Mahomes, you know?
Right.
They can still win with guys that you've never heard of probably.
So Brian Hoyer is back with the Patriots. Remember, he was with the Texans, helped the Chiefs win a playoff game. He single-handedly helped the Chiefs win a playoff game that year. He was so bad. And he's back with the Patriots. He's their backup quarterback. Jaron Stidham, who was he was with Auburn last year, quarterback. He's a young guy. He's the third-string quarterback right now. I don't think he's the next Tom Brady.
No, Jaron Stidham I don't think is the next Tom Brady.
No, I don't think so. And then and to answer my own question, thanks to Google, the L.A. Chargers, you know who their backup quarterback is? I would not have gotten this right.
I feel like I should know it, but I don't.
It's a guy we know.
Yeah.
And he was a starter for a team that made the playoffs just 2 years ago. And you won't get it. So I'll save you time. Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, well.
Yeah, he's the backup quarterback for the Chargers, which that's not a bad. I've said all along, Tyrod Taylor's probably the prototypical good backup quarterback.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's safe. He doesn't make mistakes. He can run the ball. The third-string quarterback for the Chargers, and he might be a guy that's a sleeper, is the guy that Coach Kleiman just coached.
Stick.
Easton Stick. Yep. Yeah, he's a third-string quarterback. So he'd probably have – I think there's a little bit of potential there possibly. But, yeah, I mean, you look at the Chargers, they don't really have anybody ready, the heir apparent. And that bodes well for the Chiefs in the future as well. Because the Raiders, They don't really have anybody. Their apparent Derek Carr, and I don't think Carr's the answer based on how he's played the last couple of years after he looked like MVP 3 years ago.
Yeah.
The Broncos, you know, maybe Drew Lock is their the guy that's going to be great. They thought Paxton Lynch was at one point, so who knows? The Chiefs are way ahead of the curve in their division. Everybody else, and the Chargers are as far back as anybody, unless Easton Stick works out.
Yeah.
So, and the Chargers will be drafting low in the first round again this year.
Phillip Rivers is going to just completely break down.
Yes, he would.
Like, he's just going to...
Well, mentally he does sometimes.
Yeah, but I mean, his body, I don't know. He has not had a lot of those...
He takes some hits.
Yeah.
He's a tough dude, man.
And I'm thinking, you know, that's going to be a deal where he just breaks one day and he's broke.
I think you're
he's
right.
done.
Could be Alex Smith thing or anything. Yeah. It's just over.
Like, I can't believe some of the... Like,
I'm with it.
As long as he's been able to go without having some kind of major see-you-later injury, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. He's been there a long time.
But yeah, they don't have a good – I mean, like you said, Taylor's not a bad backup to have if something does happen there.
No, that's a good insurance policy to have. So I thought about Tyrann Taylor being the backup for the Chiefs when they were looking for a backup, and then he got Henny, and I'm okay with Henny. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, he's another one of the prototypical guys you'd want there. Yeah. He's had some experience starting in the league and a veteran. He understands what it takes.
Especially if your defense is better, which it should be.
Yeah.
We'll continue to follow it. Chiefs Training Camp Veterans Report today. You can listen to the Chiefs throughout the season. We're home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas, our sister station, Z96.3 The Lake. Have a great day and a great weekend.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.